This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Hi, I'm Tony La Russa, and you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box with Pete Caliendo.
This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone from around the world, and thanks for joining us on another great episode of Baseball Outside the Box, the show that brings you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Great to see everybody live on Facebook. We are at Baseball Outside the Box. So join us. If you got any questions on Facebook, just write them at the bottom. We will try to get to our guests all the questions you have. Of course, we've got a ton of questions we're going to be asking. And don't forget, help us out. Go to the Facebook page. Join it. That way you can get all the videos and tips that we put on there daily. There's a lot of great information. Don't forget, we're also on Twitter at Baseball Out. Help us with social media. Try to do your best if you can to just forward it. And then when you forward social media, it just goes to other people that you know that are in the game of baseball, and it just helps the game grow. We think our podcast can help a lot of coaches, players, and parents, so help us out there. If you're a new listener, thank you for joining. And don't forget, go to Baseball Outside the Box, join the show. You can go on iTunes, you can go on Stitcher, hit the logo, join the show, and you can get updates all the time on every show that comes up. That way you don't forget about a show. And that's what's great about podcasts. And you don't even have to listen to the whole thing. You can listen to it to parts, different parts at different times. Take notes. There's a lot of learning going on. I know I take notes all the time while I'm actually doing the show. Our loyal listeners, thank you very much. We love you. You guys have been great. You can help us out by going to, obviously, our website and check out iTunes and Stitcher and give us a 5-star rating if you love the show. Don't forget, email us at info@baseballoutsidethebox. Tell us about the show. If you love it, great. Let us know why. If you don't like it, tell us why, how we can make it better. We're always trying to improve the show. So we're excited, as always, to bring you another great show of some of the best experts. And before we do that, let me tell you a little bit about our guest that we're going to be interviewing today. A great, great friend. He's a super individual. We are going to be talking about vision when it comes to baseball. Well, I would assume vision is the number one thing when it comes to any kind of sport. I can't assume anything else. I don't know how you can play any sport or do anything in life without fantastic vision. And obviously, you've got to train it. You got to train your vision. So Dr. Bill Harrison is from Slow the Game Down. I am sure you've seen a lot of his tweets. If you're on Twitter, he is at Dr._BillHarrison. And also his website, slowthegamedown.com. Now, Dr. Harrison, I call him the godfather. You know, I'm Italian, so I'm going to call him the godfather of vision. This man was ahead of his time. This is why it's going to be a great, great show. Way ahead of his time. In the 70s, he started with the Kansas City Royals with Ewing Kauffman, the owner of the Kansas City Royals. One of his pupils, George Brett, but he had many. He's worked with 12 major league organizations. He's worked with so many NCAA clubs in baseball and in softball. He's worked with Olympic athletes. You know, some of the names you'll know, but a lot of coaches use his program, have used his program in the past. He's had legendary people like Jack McKeon, Sid Thrift, Branch Rickey Jr. You all know him. John Schuerholz, a great GM. Charlie Lau, the great hitting instructor. And our good friend Bam Bam Mullins. These guys all use it. And at the collegiate level, you guys know all these names. He's worked with all these guys. Augie Garrido, Gene Stevenson, Bob Bennett, Scalinas, Lopez, Pat Casey, and so many more, not to mention the major league guys like Rod Carew and Tony Gwynn, and it just keeps going on. Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa. He's worked with pitchers. He's considered the country's premier mind for sports enhancement with countless world-class athletes to prepare them for competition. He's got several books. I've got one here. You can see it here if you're looking at live on Facebook. How to Perform, his latest book, How to Perform Like the Pros, but he's got several of them. You can check those out on his website. So let's get started. Wanted to give you a little background of Dr. Harrison, but first thing I want to do is I want to welcome Dr. Harrison to the show. How are you, doctor?
Hey, Peter, thank you. It's your pleasure to join you.
Well, it's always a pleasure. I know we did that 10-minute kind of recap last year a little bit when we were at the Vancouver Clinic, and that was a it was exciting just to do a 10-minute clip for on Baseball Outside the Box. We look forward to doing this 1-hour show right now. So I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to let our audience know. I can't remember the year, but how we met about 20 years ago. I followed Dr. Harrison a lot, but how we met was at the American Baseball Coaches Association. We happened to be at breakfast, and during the breakfast, I was telling another coach about Dr. Harrison's article in one of the major magazines. He's had many articles in many magazines. And believe it or not, while I was telling him that, he was sitting right next to me, and I didn't know that because I'd never met Dr. Harrison. I don't know if you remember that, Bill.
I do remember. In fact, I was with Coach Bob Bennett, Hall of Fame college baseball coach, at the same time.
Well, that was, I'll tell you what, that was a, for me, it was a highlight of my career when I'm sitting there and all of a sudden you're sitting right next to me. So that was a lot of fun. And I've learned a lot by reading your book. And what I like to do is I'd like our audience live on Facebook and also on Baseball Outside the Box to know a little bit about where, because, you know, you were like a pioneer. You were in the years, in the 70s, where vision probably wasn't even looked at. Nobody even paid attention to it. And all of a sudden, here you come on board, you know, with the Academy. Tell us a little about the Kansas City Academy, Mr. Kaufman, how that relationship started and some of the obstacles that maybe you had early on in the 70s.
I'm happy to. You know, I may even divert a little bit further back to tell you that I was a college baseball player, and I just knew I was headed for the show. But I ended up becoming a pitcher. And then the bad news on that is I only had one arm injury, and it was a career-ending injury. So I went to optometry school. I decided I want to be a family man. I got to have a profession. And so I went to optometry school. All the time, this was in Berkeley, Cal Berkeley. And all the time I was watching the San Francisco Giants, and they were so gifted with Willie Mays and Willie McCovey and the Alou brothers and various other players. But as I watched them, I was really surprised in watching the game occasionally on television. We wouldn't get it very often. It's like, you know, these guys don't see the ball very well. Now, they would at times, and they didn't have to see it well too often, but I thought, I think they can get better. So that's where it all started, was watching the San Francisco Giants in the mid to late 60s.
Well, tell me this, when you first started with the Academy, tell us about the Academy a little bit. And when you first started, tell us some of the obstacles.
Sure. The Royals Baseball Academy was a phenomenal development. The idea was of Ewing Kaufman, the owner of the Kansas City Royals. And he had bought a expansion baseball team in about 1969, and I was fortunate to know him quite well. He told me one time, he says, I just made an awful mistake. I spent $9 million to get this team, and all I ended up with is has-beens, players that nobody else wanted. I have to find a better way. And that's when he conceived of the Royals Baseball Academy.
And now, I know you had, at that time, when you first attended the Academy, there were obviously major league coaches there. I think Charlie Lau was one of them. What were some of the obstacles that you had, you know, and trying to explain to guys that vision is the key to success when it comes to whether it be hitting or pitching or fielding or any of the skills of baseball?
Well, you know, the funny thing about it, there was less obstacles then than there are today. Players, first of all, they weren't... The players that went to the Academy weren't players that had played a lot of baseball, so they were open-minded. One was Frank White. He was in the first year's class. There were some others that had made it to the major leagues. And the key here is I had total support from the director, Sid Thrift, who mm-hmm. became famous as a baseball general manager in later years. But by having Sid Thrift, Buzzy Keller, various fellows on board, it was a lot easier to work with the players. And we worked with about 50 players each year, and some were position players, pitchers, and very young. But, you know, 18, 19, actually Frank was barely 20 years of age. He was a little bit older. And these were very receptive young men who were just wanting to get better.
And at that time, what were some of the things, because then we're going to be talking about, obviously, things that you're working on in the last 3-4 years. What were some of the things back then that you were working on with some of those players?
Well, you know, frankly, what I feel really good about is what we work with today is refined, but the same principles were there back in the day, back in the early 70s. I think in retrospect, we had the players doing too many things. We probably overwhelmed them, but we were trying to get as much done as we possibly could. And a lot of it had to do with the understanding that vision in baseball, or vision in any sport, it's not about eyesight. It is important to have good eyesight. And some players, like Ronald Washington, was one of the players at that time, and we had to correct his eyesight. But in most cases, that's not what we do. We determine whether the eyesight is good enough, and then if it isn't good enough, get it taken care of. But what it's more about is vision and perception and seeing, recognizing, tracking, reacting. Now, what that's all about is a mistake that I realized that was an issue back then, it still is today, is too many things are done by specialists. They're done indoors. They're done in a room where it's artificial. Mm-hmm. But the player is out there where lots of things are taking place. And sound is typically not too important, but it certainly can be a distraction. Fatigue, coordination. So what our program was about then, and it is now, is how to use the eyes, the brain, and the body together to get maximum results for what you're trying to accomplish. So that was there in the early 70s, and here it is 50 years later almost, and it's still there.
Well, you know, I love that, and I'll tell you why, because, you know, from a common sense standpoint, I always wondered, and I know in your book you mentioned this, you know, follow your eyes as they control your attention and your body. You know, you would think, you know, that your eyes control your body, you know, your brain, and then your brain controls your body. So why would you not, when you're a baseball player or any athlete, the first thing you should be working on is controlling your vision?
Well, here's true then and true today. No one knows how they see, what kind of vision they have compared to someone else. They assume mm-hmm. it's good, but they have no idea how someone, say like a George Brett, how they were able to see the ball. The other is, in all fairness, most people don't know that it's improvable. They used to think for sure years past that it was strictly a inherited capability. But no, most of it is trainable and improvable. And honestly, George Brett wasn't very good when he was 18, 19 years of age. But he had desire, he had heart, and he had willingness to work. And he never questioned what we asked him to do. He just went out and did it. And then what was good about George Brett compared to some of the players we see today is if something worked for him, he stayed with it. It wasn't a matter of results. It's like, this is the right thing to do, and I'm going to continue doing it, no matter what the results are. Of course, fairly easy for him because his results were pretty good most of the time.
And I know you've been called in many articles the vision and focus coach. You know, kind of explain a little bit vision and focus. There's a difference between the two, but yet they work together.
Yeah, you know, it's not as easy to explain as I would like for it to be, but I guess the first thing to think about, and I always do this, even though I've been doing this for years, is how would this athlete, no matter who they are, free throw shooter or a wide receiver or a quarterback or a shortstop, how would they perform if they were wearing a patch over their eyes? Hmm. Well, it makes it very clear, just about everything begins with what one sees. So if, you know, it's unrealistic. But not only does everything begin with what a player sees, when it's done right, it ends with what they see. In other words, vision is involved early and it's involved late, as well as all the way through. Now, focus is very similar. You can't focus with a blindfold on. Mm-hmm. And focus is the capability to turn in one's attention. Now, I'll give you an example. Every one of us drive down the highway, or as a passenger, and we have the ability to focus on what's ahead. It's a visual form of focus. But realistically, most of us go into automatic pilot and we'll drive too far without even knowing what's there. We'll wake up and say, gee, I missed my turnoff, or where am I? Happens all the time. Now, with youngsters, or when I say youngsters, any high school, college student or younger, when they read, they sit down, they open up the book, they even turn a few pages, and then realize nothing registered. So focus is about not only seeing, but having the information register and recognize it and then do something appropriately with it.
Very, very interesting. I love that. And, you know, here's a great time during the show. We're going to take a question off Facebook Live. We've got a lot of people. I wish I could mention all of them. We got so many people listening on Facebook Live. But a good friend of mine, resident of Baseball Academy, one of the best in the Dominican Republic, Santiago Eddie Ferrara. And you know, his question is this: How is this different than instincts, and how much of it is innate and can be learned?
That's a very, very good question. It's one I've never been asked, but I've always been aware of. What we have tended to think as instincts, in many cases, is learnable. Let's say, for example, Willie Mays was known, and of course he did it in the World Series, I think in 1954, but to be able to hear the crack of the bat, see something, but take off running, and then turn around without seeing the ball, and then turn around and the ball is right there. That's thought of an instinct. But really what he was capable of doing, and I don't know that he even knew this, honestly, but he may have, but what he was able to do was to see and hear, and then that created a picture in his brain of where the ball was going. And he had confidence. He knew he could run over in the corner of the ballpark, and the ball was going to show when he looked up. So that would be considered an instinct, but it's an instinct that every player can get better. Now, today, there's a lot of players that don't do that very well. But if that was something they wanted to get better at, they certainly could. Same thing about, we'll take a lot of examples, but let's just say picking up the ball out of the pitcher's hand. It's not easy, obviously. You got pitchers of different sizes. You got them with different velocities. But when you think of lefty and righty, and then you think of all the releases up above and three-quarter sidearm submarine, it's a very difficult thing to do. But guys learned, and I can tell you a few that learned. Where George Brett learned, Hal McRae learned, God bless him, Don Baylor learned, Rod Carew learned, Barry Bonds learned. This goes back a long time ago. And then there's current players today that have learned how to have a method to use their eyes so they weren't distracted by the pitcher's motion, but they knew how to zone right in and pick up the ball out of the pitcher's hand. And they not only see the ball, they get to where they could actually see the position of the hand, which would kind of alert them to what the ball likely is going to do. But there still, as the ball is released, they still have to track it, watch its trajectory, watch the spin rate, and make some decisions based on what they see. But that's trainable. That's improvable. Now, you can't train that and train physical things at the same time. It does take some exclusive training. So, for example, in picking up the ball, we spend a lot of time with hitters in the bullpen while the starting pitcher or the team's better pitchers are pitching, and a variety of pitchers, we have them working on various strategies on how to pick up the ball so that they're very confident that they can do it and use it when they're facing, they're in a game, they're trying to compete, they're trying to hit, and they're facing good pitching, they'll have a strategy on how to pick up the ball in the pitcher's hand.
And it is difficult, I guess, like you said, as we talk about the skills, if you're working on the skills and then you're trying to work on vision, that makes it extremely hard to do both at the same time.
Yeah, you know, it's a very complex situation because coaches only have so much time with their players, and they do need to work on the physical approach and the mechanics and everything. But if a player really wants to accelerate, or if a coach wants to help a player accelerate, sometimes you have to break it apart. And I would say that a hitter can give it lip service. I'm going to work on seeing the ball, But really and truly, they're trying to hit the ball, and that they're not working on what their intention was. And I don't blame them. I try to hit it too.
Yeah, it's hard enough just to hit it. I agree. Now, we're live on Facebook, and one of your good friends actually is live on Facebook, former major league pitcher. I had my pleasure of speaking at the Cuban Baseball Convention in November, and Mark Littell was there. He's currently on Facebook, and I know he follows you a great deal. I'm trying to see if
Mark Littell.
I was trying to see if he had any questions. I'm sure he's asked you plenty of questions throughout his career. We'll keep going on. If Mark brings up a question, it'd be great. We got so many people on live on Facebook, and we love it. One of the things to my heart is, and you know, during the show, Bill, we have we've got coaches, players, and parents, and you know, we're going to continue on to talk about the vision aspect of it. But I remember when I read an article, and I want the parents to understand this, you know, because we've got a lot of parents in the game that, you know, have so much passion. They love their kids. They want to help them. And as you know, a lot of them are even coaches. A lot of them are trying to teach somebody what to do right before they go up to hit, or they're trying to talk to them while they're pitching.
Right.
Yeah. Explain where the problem comes in when it comes especially to the vision aspect.
Okay, that's a very good question. We typically, when we're with a player and their parents or coaches, demonstrate the complexity of trying to see and hear at the same time. It's almost impossible. So if a coach and or a parent, or lots of parents, are yelling and screaming and giving mechanical advice and things of this nature, the poor hitter doesn't have much of a chance. It doesn't mean they can't overcome it occasionally, but they're not going to do it with regularity. So what we try to get players to understand, it kind of relates, but then try to get the coaches and parents to understand is when the player is out of the box, they can do their thinking and they can do their listening. So that's the time to give them, if it's appropriate instruction, to give them that instruction. Mm-hmm. Once they have 2 feet in the box, the hitter needs to shut it down. It's ignore anything and everything. And the coaches need to stop giving instructions. They had their moment. They can't continue giving instruction. Now, you know, with youth, coaches need to tell the parents, I do not want anything but just general noise. You can clap, but I don't want any specifics. You know, when your son is coming out of the batter's, even the on-deck circle into the box, they need to be thinking about what they're doing. If there's needed for added coaching, you can do it later, but not at the time they're trying to play. Mm-hmm. It is so difficult. You know, even to this day, I marvel at the fact that any player, softball or baseball, can see the ball well enough to hit it with some authority. When you think about it, every ball is different. Even if you find a pitcher, say, well, he's over the top. Well, you know, weather conditions are different today. The ball is different now. The ball is a little moist, or it's got a little dirt on it, or whatever. The hands are different. I would venture to say that probably no two pitches are the same. And the hitter has to be able to read what that difference is if he's going to have a chance. So it needs to be an exclusive action, and truly, here's one of the difficult things. The game is very mechanical. There's no question about it. Executing the proper mechanics is very, very important. However, that's what needs to be done in practice and all kinds of drills to where it becomes automated. It gets stored in the subconscious. It's either there or it's not. But when they hit in the game, it needs to become strictly, you know, first and foremost, it's a visual game. The hitter needs to lock into seeing the ball as well as they can figure out a way to do so. And what it is there's like a consciousness of seeing, but everything else is on the subconscious. Mm-hmm. And what is interesting that does occur, it's such quite an event of hitting, that hitting a shot. You know, so often hitters will be on first, second, third, or hit a home run, and they have no idea what they did. I've had many players say, yeah, I was standing on second base, and I'm thinking, did I just do that? Well, here's the explanation. One is they did see the ball, because they could usually relate seeing the ball, at least to some degree. But that was a conscious effort, and everything else was subconscious. And so they don't feel their body. They don't have any thoughts. They just let it go. And they feel a little guilty, and I said, no, that's what you want. You're right there. You're doing exactly what you should be doing. And but they can't do that if they're being yelled at and told to do this. And, you know, I mean, certain games, youth games, you can hear 10 parents given 10 different bits of instruction.
Yeah, exactly.
And everybody means well. Everybody means well. Everybody wants the kid to do well and have success. They can't do it with those kinds of – they're just not going to see the ball. It's like sending them up there with blindfold on.
Absolutely. And then what I've done is I've taken your article and actually sent it to parents so they can read it and understand it so that way they know that they're actually doing harm to their kids, because that's one thing they don't want to do. Now, you mentioned
– well, I complimented on, you've done that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I recommend to all our coaches that, especially at the younger levels, you know, if they're having issues with parents doing this during games, like you said, they mean well, you know, I recommend them that they, you know, instead of trying to explain it to them, send them the article and let them read it. And I think the parents, you know, are pretty smart. They'll understand that they're doing something wrong that can really hinder their kids' ability to do well in games. So the other thing you mentioned, you know, we're talking about vision. We're going to get into some of the drills, hopefully. I know on a podcast it's not easy to talk about drills, but we're going to talk about some of the drills a little later. But when you're talking about a pitcher working in the bullpen and working on his, you know, vision and so that you were talking about earlier, do we also want to add music and distractions and things to try to that makes it more realistic in a game situation?
Well, I think that's a good idea. Now, you know, you're two different directions there. Sometimes it's just helpful to have music that's, I don't think a lot of this crazy stuff is good, but nice music that gives a rhythm, because rhythm is a big part of the hitting process, and the eyes function better if they have a sense of, the brain has a sense of rhythm. So anything that can get rhythm going, I think is really good. Now, it is true that to get players to focus better, this thing, provided they have some ability, is, yeah, you can put them in a distractive environment, and the distractive sounds and lots of noise and so forth is probably a pretty good drill process. But obviously they have to have some capability before you get there.
Absolutely. Now, our good friend Mark Littell is live on Facebook. Welcome, Mark. Mm. You know, he says, train your eyes and brain to work faster. Maybe explain that, what he means by that.
Well, Mark is terrific. I just want to mention that he was the first pitcher that I worked with, 1973, I believe it was, at the Kansas City Royals spring training, or it might have been the Instructional League. And he went on and had a great career, but he had a phenomenal advance from low A ball and for his standards, not doing real well in low A ball. He was in the major leagues in July. This was from Instructional League to July. And he got to the major leagues a little bit young. I think he was 20. They rushed him up there. They needed him. But he got his feet wet, and he did okay and went back down and then developed other skills and then came up and had about 8 years in the big leagues. But he's a really fascinating, and he's a great writer, by the way. He's come out with a couple of great books in recent time. As far as getting things to work, we use the eyes as a tool to control the brain. And believe it or not, what you do with your eyes can have an effect on the brain. For example, if you drive down the highway and you're having difficulty keeping your focus on what's going on, just get yourself doing a regimen of look in the left rear view mirror, look straight down the highway, look in the right view mirror, look in all of your mirrors, but keep looking back and forth down the highway. You'll find you stay amazingly alert. Time kind of slows down. So we advocate that for pitchers, for defensive players, for hitters, to develop a regimen of looking around on the field. Mm. The opposite of that is staring. Staring, what happens is you get lost in thought. You start thinking about all kinds of things. So when you get lost in thought, and you know, staring being maybe the reason, or it might be some other reason. What happens? The ball looks fast. It looks really, the action looks, everything looks fast. When you get highly visual, everything slows down. And so by doing what we call eye switching in some pattern that seems comfortable and staying visually alert, it can kind of slow down the process of what you see. Now, the end result of that is most everybody feels like their brain slows down too. So by using their eyes to slow down what they see, they feel like their brain slows down. I want to add to this, I have a couple of friends that are neuroscientists at UC Irvine, University of California, Irvine, and they say that when someone is performing at the highest level, the brain is doing nothing. The brain goes to sleep. Wow. So that's kind of what you want in baseball. You want the brain not to be involved. Now, for example, a lot of players, when they're at their best, there's hardly any verbalization. They hardly are saying anything. They might say a word or two, but there's very few words. The brain is asleep, but they're seeing and they're reacting to what they see. Now, at other times, when they have a lot of emotion, a lot of excitement, they have a lot of words going, a lot of chatter, good and bad. And when that happens, the brain gets active, everything starts racing, everything gets faster, and their focus is not as good. So you know, it's kind of a mindset of learning how to get the most out of what you've got.
You know, that's very interesting, because I'm thinking the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, when I every time I used to go up the hit, you're always thinking about your mechanics, and that obviously doesn't help if you're thinking about that. Now we got Eddie Ferrara again. I thought this was two interesting questions. That's why I'm going to mention them. One, in today's world, we're measuring everything, you know, launch angle, spin velocity, all kinds of stuff. Is there a way, and Eddie's asking this, is there a way to measure players' vision so that way they can they understand where they're at and then work from there to enhance it?
Okay, now you hit the nail on the head about the analytics. They're very, very good. But one of the issues with analytics is you get the information. The question is, what do you do about it? How
right.
do you make them better? And I think it'd be difficult to suggest that you can't involve the eyes if you're going to try to make them better. Now, one of the I want to think this through just a little bit. One of the considerations is helping the player understand what they see or what they don't see. Now, for example, we ask players all the time, in all sports, not just in baseball, what were you looking at? And it's amazing how often it's like, I have no idea, after they think about it. They don't know where they're looking, when they're looking, or why they're looking. And so I think that's what a coach can do, is say, look, when you're on first base and you're getting looking at a certain place, I need you to be here at a certain moment. I want you looking there. Now, obviously, the same would be true in hitting, but let's take bunting. Where should you be looking? And for example, if you're going to bunt, should be looking at the bottom of the ball as it's coming down. In other words, if the ball is on a downward plane, should you be looking at the bottom of the ball, the middle of the ball, or the top of the ball? Well, to most people, it probably comes out like, yeah, when you think about it, I should be looking at the top of the ball. But there's some other factors that go into it, and that is everybody sees different. And some players see the ball higher than it truly is. Others see the ball lower than it truly is. So they may have to adjust their vision to compensate for a little bit of malalignment. Now, that sounds like a bizarre idea, but it's very relevant. Take an example. You know, everybody knows you need to see the speed of the pitch, but how about the height of the pitch? And how about the changing height of the pitch? Very few people have to see height. I'll tell you who does is a carpenter. Carpenters need to see heights, and they're very good at it. But hitters do too, and most hitters aren't very good at it. So seeing height is a piece of it, because what happens is And this is a long answer to the analytics, but when you see the ball well and you see where you should square it properly to achieve the analytics, then you got some command taking place. You're not just swinging wildly, but you got some command of what you're doing.
Mm. Very interesting. You know, another area that I believe, you know, just recently, when in the last 5-10 years, you know, with social media coming out, there's a lot of young players, a lot of young kids are on, you know, social media. They're on the computer a lot. What are the effects of a youngster being on there too much? And are there maybe other areas that they can focus on to help improve their vision other than being on the computer, just, you know, checking out social media?
Boy, that's a really good question, Peter. You know, let me say this. Anything that they do in their hands, which could be reading a book, it could be you know, some kind of a hobby, it could be social media, obviously. They're using their eyes differently than they do outdoors. They're turning their eyes inward. And when they turn their eyes inward, the eyes, are everybody's different, but there tends to be over-focusing. And so sometimes just by using something in their hand, they don't get better at it. They just have an effect on their distance vision. Look at it today. You know, years ago, we had a handful of players who wore glasses. This is before contact lenses. I think Dom DiMaggio comes to mind. There are probably a few others. There was a little bit of survival of the fittest, but no one wore correction. Large number of players today wear contact lenses. Quite a few have had laser eye surgery, and some wear glasses. Why is that? Well, there's change in society. There's change in this, you know, spending a lot of time up close. So it could be detrimental. Now, there's a bigger picture, and this one I don't want to spend too much time, but it's a one-hour show about the effects of blue light. Blue light comes from a digital source, and it's very dangerous for young people. It's not so bad for someone 40 and above until they have cataract surgery, and then it's dangerous. But it's not as dangerous for a 30-year-old as it is for a 20-year-old, or it's not as dangerous for a 20-year-old as a 10 or a 5 or whatever. But the blue light that comes from the the smartphones and the tablets, definitely can be very injurious and can probably shorten the careers of some players.
Wow. I want to encourage everybody listening, whether you're on Facebook Live or you're listening to the podcast, go to slowthegamedown.com. You will see some drills on there because both Dr. Harris and his son, Ryan, who works together with him and also is a co-author on the book, the latest book, How to Perform Like the Pros, you'll see them on MLB Network showing drills that you can utilize with some of your players. Now, Dr. Harrison, one of the areas I wanted to talk about was, you know, where does this all begin for kids and coaches? Where do they start when it comes to vision training? How can they, you know, how do they start and how do you continue? Some advice.
Well, I think the one thing is for coaches need to start prioritizing and take a look at players' performance and in their mind say, was that a physical problem? Was that a mental problem? Mm-hmm. Or could it have been a visual problem? Now, the nice thing about visual problems, not all of them, but many of them are easier to resolve quickly and get a change of performance. And that is by letting the player know that all I want you to do right now is see the ball as well as you can. And if you get one you like, hit it hard. Keep it simple. In other words, I don't care what your mechanics are. I don't care if you, you know, I just want you to see the ball well and hit it naturally and hit it hard. Now, the amazing thing about it, when they go on automatic pilot, usually the mechanics are very, very good. Now, there are a lot of hitters who do not see the ball early at all. But on the other hand, some, and probably more, don't see the ball late. They don't see the ball deep enough. Now, deep is not in the catcher's glove, although we can mention something about that. But for an inside pitch, it's out front. For a ball down the middle, it's out front not quite as much. And for an outside pitch, it's a little more, you know, off the body, if you will, straight across. So what seeing deep is, and you know, Pitchers need to see the ball deep. Now, let me just tell you something. Here is vision training at its worst. Hmm. All day long today, hitters are hitting soft toss, off the tee, and short toss. And they're starting their swing, and they're looking to see where the ball goes even before they hit it. Hmm. They do it all day long.
Right.
They do it in short toss. They do it in batting practice. They do it everywhere. So now they get in the game. They see a pitch they like. Their eyes go off at 10, 15 feet in front of contact. And when that happens, it's not such a visual thing. It's mechanical as well, because the head moves, the shoulders move. The body is no longer square at contact, if there was contact. And the bat speed slows down. So turn this back around, one of the simplest across-the-board drills, and it's been around, but it needs to be really enforced by coaches. When you're taking soft toss, short toss, batting tee, and even their BP, I do not want you to see where the ball goes. I do not want you to look to where the ball goes. You know, the irony is, Peter, and you probably know this, you can stand on and hit off the tee right now, and you know where the ball goes.
Sure.
You know when you hit it well. You know when you hit it up, you hit it down, and whatever. You don't need to see it. If hitters just would get that habit of not peeking. You know, Albert Pujols was, when he was with the Cardinals, and not to take anything away from what he's done with the Angels, but there was a 3 or 4 year period, I think he might have been the best hitter in the history of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Pujols was amazing. And I remember he was being interviewed on ESPN, and the questions were, well, what do you do? This is his spring training. And he never answered the question about what he did mechanically, which they were seeking. He just kept answering the question. The key to me is to not peek and swing through the ball. Hmm. Do not peek and swing through the ball. And that's what he did so well, so consistently through the years. I think he's not quite as disciplined on that now, but that would be one bit of advice for every player. Do not peek, swing through the ball.
Hmm.
Ryan Harrison uses, let your bat lead your eyes out of the contact area. Don't let your eyes lead the bat out of the contact area. And that's a good one as well.
Absolutely. Now, to our coaches, I'm assuming that the more realistic the situation is. So if we're talking about hitters, we're talking about trying to simulate the exact release point, the exact distance, the exact velocity, if you're training. Because if you're training at 30 feet, but yet, you know, the ball's only coming at 50 miles an hour and you're supposed to be facing guys at 90, that's gonna be a problem.
Well, you know, it's what you're training. If you're training, it's okay if you're training mechanics. It's like, I want you to work on your hand action or your, you know, whatever it may be, the footwork. Then the eyes don't have to be involved. And by the way, that brings up something. Hitters with less than really good vision, and pitchers with less than really good vision, defensive players with less than really good vision. And when I say really good vision, I'm talking about their vision tactics, the use of their eyes. They do fine in practice most of the time. It doesn't show up in practice. It only shows up in game time when the game gets a little faster. And that's when the bad vision tactics come into play. So, but there's a reason for that. I mean, there's somewhat of a reason for that is that there are times, maybe times during the season, it's like, I want you to 100% think on mechanics. Now, Peter, I need you to really work on your right hand. That's all I want you to work on. Harry, I want you to pay attention to your left front hip turn, mm-hmm. whatever. And that's okay. Maybe you do that for a week or two or three or four. If that's what you're working on, don't look for results. Don't look for line drives. They're accidents. Now, a little later, after you've ingrained that, it's gotten into the subconscious, now you might say, now I want you to do that, but I want you and see if it holds up. If it doesn't hold up, it means you got to go back to the salt mines and work more on getting the mechanics right. Or maybe this player needs a different mechanical approach.
Sure. But when it comes to vision, that's something that I would assume has to be worked on a daily basis. It can't just be worked on one day and then you don't worry about it for another week. It's a continual
training skill. Yeah, it's a good point, Peter. You know, I think if I had a magic wand, I'd say, you know, if he's got 20 swings today, 50 swings, whatever it is, establish a percentage can be mechanical. A percentage can be just automatic. Last 10, I want him to take a little bit of time to get really prepared like he's in a game, have a focused mindset, and work on seeing the ball really well. Mm-hmm. And try to split it up a little bit.
Okay, and then let's take a practice since we're on that. Where would you put the certain vision skills? If they came to your website, and I know we're going to talk about a little bit about your app also that you have, but if they came to your website and they learned some drills and they learned something from the app, and they where would you throw those into a practice? At the beginning, the middle, the end? How would you kind of, you know, guide that?
You know, Peter, actually, on our website, we have three books. And so the three books have the best of ideas. I would say that's where they would get the most. Now, within there, there are some of the drills that we have other products for, like you mentioned, the STGD athlete app. Mm-hmm. For an advanced player, the best training product we have is called the 3D Depth Reception and Tracking Trainer. It takes some dedication. It's not easy, but it pays by far the highest dividends. What it's about is getting the two eyes to work together to get them more relaxed and to enhance one's depth perception. You know, depth perception has been kicked around for many, many years. I don't think too many people really know how it applies. They just know it's important. But here's what it's about. With depth perception, you see change of speed of pitches more effectively, even as a defensive player. And if you don't have good depth perception, every ball looks fast, quick, and you don't really read it very well. So by enhancing 3D depth perception and tracking trainer with the trainer, one gets to see balls better. I mean, they just invariably, I had a player the other day, a AAA catcher, says, I got to do it all the time. It gives me like laser vision, whatever laser vision is. And he hit 290 in AAA. He's only about 22 years old. So we've had that with endless players. I mean, going back to George Brady Anderson, I mean, I can name endless players who used it very effectively through the years. Now, with that, we now have the 3D depth perception tracking trainer with a use that can take place on the bench, the on-deck circle, and actually even between pitches. And what it is, it's a very miniaturized 3D depth perception tracking trainer that can be put on, can literally be put on a bat, or it can be put on a glove or protective equipment. Mm-hmm. And used, once it's developed, if it's used for like 10 seconds, it's just amazing how effective it is. If it's used correctly for 10 seconds, the end result is ridiculous. And when I say ridiculous, is it creates a mindset of being calm, focused, confident, highly visual, relaxed body, and yet an aggressive mindset. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Sure.
Now, it has to be worked with over a period of, say, 2 or 3 weeks to get that results. And it's used, so at first it's used off the field. And for a long time, 20 minutes or so. Then it's used in the clubhouse, sometimes on the dugout, for maybe a couple minutes. And then the portable piece is used at the bat rack, the on-deck circle, in the hole, and between pitches sometimes. And when I say between pitches, it might be 5 seconds. You know, the on-deck circle, it might be 10 or 15. And so there's a methodology. If it's used, it produces that great feeling. So I want to suggest to any player and any coach that played, it's like, how good were you when you were calm, focused, confident, highly visual, physically relaxed, and aggressive-minded? And I think anybody will say, I was the best. I hear that all the time. I'm at my best. I was the best. They couldn't stop me. If they did get me on one at bat, I had them on the next one. And there's pitchers as well. Pitchers feel the same way. Mm-hmm. So it's a method of getting without using words, and it's not using mantras or positive thinking. It's just a drill that puts one's brain into that quiet state of mind.
Sure.
And it allows the eyes to work at their best and see the ball at the best.
You know, and after all these years, I remember, you know, even when I played, I wish I had a lot of this information, because I just can't fathom why we're not focusing on vision. And I'm using baseball as an example. Why we're not focusing on vision daily and number one when it comes to practice, when it comes to workouts, whatever it may be. And, you know, and if I'm an athlete, I'm getting that app and I'm, you know, religiously working at that, because without your vision, I just can't see, you know, anybody getting better at their skills. Now, talk to our
athletes. We've simplified it. It used to not be so simple. So we finally got it simple where people can do it quickly and easily. So I think that it's relevant today.
Exactly. Especially with today's society, everything, you know, we're used to getting things quick. So that sounds awesome. Talk to our athletes now a little bit. I want you to mention this because, you know, coaches are going to understand this part. And I know it's so simple, but we'll use hitting as an example. You know, coaches constantly remind players, and maybe you can explain the reason behind it. It makes sense, but sometimes, you know, it's harder to get players to do it. But in the hitting aspect, many times coaches are saying, you know, the more you see this pitcher, the better. So why not watch him when he's in the bullpen? Why not watch him, you know, when you're sitting in a dugout? Why not watch him when you're on deck? And then by the time you get to the game, you've seen him so much that, you know, it's going to be a little bit easier to identify the speed, the velocity, the location of the pitch. Maybe talk a little bit about the importance of that.
Okay, so one of the things we started at Kansas City Royals in the early 70s, and people thought we were nuts, and the players then learned it really worked, and then we got working with major league players in the 73 when Jack McKeon was a manager of the Royals, and a lot of players got a lot of mileage out of it. And it had a bad term, but what I call today is visual thinking. In other words, we can think through words. We can think by using words. We can think by using feeling. You know, smell and taste can kind of contribute to what we think. But the best, highest quality of thinking is visual thinking, and particularly when it's kind of multisensory visual thinking. So that's what you achieve by studying pictures or studying whatever you study. Mm-hmm. You create the visual pictures in your mind that you can use for visual thinking. So absolutely right. The more you see a pitcher and his tendencies and the same thing with hitters. Who took this to the bank along with other things is Greg Maddux.
Sure.
Greg Maddux attended every opposing team's batting practice by doing it from the dugout. And he carefully watched hitters and their tendencies. And not only their tendencies, what they did mechanically, but also, let's say, for example, in the BP, all they were doing is trying to jerk the ball out of the ballpark. He knew they were going to pump up and try to swing from their derriere, and he'd take advantage of that. Mm. But he also knew that certain mechanics, he would see their eyes fly off the ball and knew that late break would be very effective against these guys. So every great player, there's a few exceptions, but there's very few that I've seen that aren't great visual thinkers. You know, back in the day, there might have been more time to do that. Today, with social media, with rush of travel, all the stuff that's going on, I think some players omit that time of being able to see themselves perform. But it's not about seeing winning the title or becoming a champion. That's okay. That's not what we advocate. What we advocate is very realistic. In other words, I watched the third baseman come in on a short hopper and how they got the ball in the glove and got it out of the glove and on the first base. I've never been that quick. I've got to incorporate that kind of quickness or movement or whatever it may be. So it's studying the game, studying the players, and just getting to where, and that's kind of the instinct part. I think back to Coach Farrar, that's where Taka, we think instincts, now that I think about this, it has a lot to do with visual thinking. Being able to see things, turn it into pictures, and then utilize those pictures at the same time.
You know, I love that term, visual thinking. And to our coaches, maybe a little tip when it comes to the pitchers they're working with to get them to improve their vision, their focus, to be able to locate the pitch a little bit better, since location is so important in, okay, and changing speeds.
Yeah, let me just toss in one thing. This is any player that plays any position, including pitching.
Mm-hmm.
When you do something right, when you do something correctly, try to pause and stop as quickly as you can, obviously not in the middle of the play, and recall, or what we call replay, what just happened from the very beginning to the very end. And you replay what you saw during that period of time. You play back your feelings. You play back your focal points. What were you focused on when you did that? Now, you don't have to ask all those questions. It's just replay it. And replay it maybe three times. So, for example, let's say that I have runners in scoring position. I'm pitching, and I got a really good hitter up, and I throw a pitch and get him out. Well, I go in the dugout, and I get all excited and happy and patting on the back and all that kind of stuff. That stuff doesn't help me one iota. What I need to do is go in the corner of the dugout and replay what I was thinking before the pitch, what I was seeing, where I was focused, what it felt like. Because you know what? I may have to throw that pitch again to another hitter at a certain time. I want to be able to duplicate that. So replay, recall, all of that can really be helpful in honing the instincts, if you will. They're there, but just try to maximize the instincts. Get them better.
As you say that, the two things that came to my mind 25 years ago, I'm going back, I think, 25 years, two things. One, the Rod Carew video of his swing and the music that
yes,
we used to watch all the time. And the second one was Rod Delmonico at the University of Tennessee, who used to show great defensive plays and great offensive hitting to his players about 10 minutes a day. They'd spent time doing that. Is that still good nowadays?
Absolutely. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's probably even better nowadays. What I would do as a parent or a coach is I would get at least one image of a player pitching really well, catching the ball really well, making a defensive play really well, hitting the ball really well. Now, if you just take one, let's just take one swing. Today, it's so much simpler to not recreate that by doing it 100 times. Replay that same swing in video 100 times.
Hmm.
And you can get someone to do it for you if you can't do it yourself. Now, the next piece is, that's where the music is a good idea that you mentioned earlier, Peter, is put some music that one feels really good about and set that music to those swings. So now, using your phone or using a tablet or even TV, any player can sit down and watch themselves swing the bat, throw the pitch, make the fielding play 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
And do it with music. Now it gets even better. How about now doing that before a game, and then when in the dugout, in the on-deck circle, when things don't look so rosy, playing that music back in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when you play that music back in your mind, it'll create that visual thinking of that repetitive, good pitching action, swinging action. And then you've changed your mindset, and now you're off and running.
Awesome. I love it. And folks, we are coming to the end of the show. We've got a couple more questions with Dr. Harrison. Just so you know, don't worry. Everything, how to contact Dr. Harrison, slowthegamedown.com, his website, and also Dr._Bill Harrison. He's on Twitter. All that will be on social media. You'll be able to contact him. You'll be able to check out all his books, his app, everything. So we will have that on our show notes. Dr. Harrison, a couple other things I want to discuss. One, love to hear what you're up to right now. Anything new that you've been working on that our audience needs to know?
Thank you, Peter. A number of things, but I want to throw in something very quickly that can take quite a bit of discussion, and that is through the years, I realized certain players really bought into what our training is about. And this, Ryan Harrison, my partner, may have observed this closer than I. And it turned out there was one thing that was very common. Many of them had had some form of head injury in their past, maybe more than once. As a matter of fact, baseball players, many played football. And, you know, they had head injury, or soccer. And what we've learned is most people who have had a head injury have a visual disturbance. They just live with it. And it really limits some of the things they can do. Now, once they start seeing improvement, they are very motivated because, obviously, it's kind of opened up the world to them. So what I'm working on right now, and I've been working on it for a few months, and I'm finally getting it there, is it's probably going to be a Facebook private group where one can go on and for 30 days, 5 days a week, get a message on how to overcome visual disturbances, motion sensitivity, that was a byproduct of mild concussions.
Wow.
And there's 4 million concussions at least in the United States yearly. They're very common. And let's just take the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
How many times does your catcher get hit right square in the mask? Hey, by the way, how about umpires? How many times do they get hit square in the face? And can they tolerate it? How many can they tolerate? One of my physician friends has a theory that they tolerate it. The toleration is directly related to their immune system. So some people have a great immune system, and they can overcome it. So many don't. They can't overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
Improving the immune system is helpful, but because most of them have visually related disturbances, they need some form of resolution of those. So that's what we're working on, is trying to get that refined.
Wow. Wow. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I think that's underestimated in the game of baseball, especially, like you said, when it comes to catchers and umpires. And it could be a young
I encourage coaches and parents to take a look at their players who kind of gone downhill with a downhill cycle. And what's it possible if they got hit in the head when they slid into second base a month ago?
Right.
They're just not the same.
Right.
So look at down cycles is a good way to see if something's going on.
Okay. And I would assume a ground ball, you get hit by a ground ball too. I get hit in the head by a ball. That happens.
Yeah. You know, I hate to tell you, it's even more than that. Loud sounds can do the same kind of thing. But I understand a concussion far better than I used to. What it is an inflammation of the brain.
Sure.
And so many things will inflame the brain. It's not just getting hit in the head, but commonly a knee to the head, a ball to the head, whatever. They all contribute to it.
Wow. Well, listen, Dr. Harrison, last thing we normally do on the show, love to give you, you know, whatever time you need. Any last advice? You know, this is obviously just a, you know, it's an hour show, but there's so much information when it comes to vision. It's so much that this is our second show because we had your son Ryan on early on in the, I think, in the fifth or sixth episode. So we continue to believe that vision is number one, and we'll continue to do more shows on vision. But any last minute advice that you'd love to give our coaches, players, or parents all around the world in the game of baseball?
Well, almost every player, 99%, need to get better visually if they're going to achieve the results they're striving for. And I think that even when kids are failing and they look like they're not trying, they're trying. They're putting in a lot of mental effort, and they're putting in a lot of physical effort, and they deserve the opportunity to be as good as they could be. You know, obviously the top of the pyramid is very narrow, but so many kids is to make the high school team or to make a college team, get into college,
sure.
Much less get into the pros. And the vision component is, I'll make it simple. We've actually do not know of anyone we've worked with that didn't get significant results. Now, well, I'll tell you a second thing, is none of them continue working enough. They think they got it, and they quit after a while. Not all, but too many.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a lifetime of sport application of working with, but it doesn't take much time. It's a minimal amount of time. It's a ridiculous small amount of time needed to get really good visually.
Folks, if you're wondering, there's a little banging going on in the background. We're trying to test your visual ability and concentration. That's why we're pounding things in the background. Dr. Harrison, listen. This has been a great show. I want to thank you. You are awesome. Folks, go to slowthegamedown.com. Check it out. There isn't anybody in the business any better, I can tell you personally. And don't forget, he's also on Twitter with a lot. In fact, I wrote notes down on Twitter as part of the show because you always have some interesting things you have on Twitter. And that's Dr. _Bill Harrison. And that's on Twitter. So, Dr. Harrison, thank you. And I know we're going to have you on the show again, man. All right, folks.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. And folks, if you don't think this is the international show, we got Bertrand Roué, my good friend out of France. It's midnight there, and he's listening and watching on live on Facebook. Yep, we've got guys all over the world listening, from the Dominican Republic to Holland. I'm looking at this. We've got a ton of people from the U.S. Thank you, everybody. I can't thank you. The more people listening to the show, obviously that helps. Remember, to all our listeners, go to our social media. We are at Baseball Outside the Box. That's our website and also our Facebook page. Go to @BaseballOut, our Twitter, check it out. Forward all the information to all your friends in the game of baseball. That helps us out. Check it out. Email me at info@BaseballOutsideTheBox. Love getting your information. I'll email you back right away. We're here to help you the best way we can. And remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sports. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds and innovative thoughts that love to challenge the status quo. We've got a ton of great, great coaches. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. This is Baseball Outside the Box, and we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.